It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. 3 weeks from today, November 6th, Election Day for the 2018 midterms. Of course, early voting has been going on throughout the state since that started up last week. This week, in fact, yesterday, we heard from two candidates vying for Iowa's second congressional district, the Libertarian candidate Mark Strauss and the incumbent Democrat Dave Loebsack. Today, we spend this half hour with the other major party candidate on the ballot, Republican Dr. Christopher Peters, the second district, to remind those who don't have it in their head, the map of Iowa. It covers the mostly the southeast corner of the state, including Muscatine, Iowa City, Davenport, Clinton, Burlington, Fort Madison, and many other towns as well. This is Dr. Peters' second attempt at unseating Dave Loebsack. We'd like you to join us this half hour with any questions you may have for candidate Peters. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100, or you can email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Dr. Peters, welcome to our studio.
Thank you, Ben. It's always good to see you.
In the past, I was just doing some interesting research today. In the past five of the past six presidential elections, this is going back to Gore v. Bush in 2000, Iowa's second district voters have supported a Democrat, the exception being 2016, of course, Donald Trump won the second district. Another way of saying, as you, I'm sure, well know, Iowa's second district is the most Democratic district in the state. You're trying to unseat the sole Democrat in Iowa's congressional delegation, Dave Loebsack. Why do you think you'd be better at representing Iowa in Washington?
Well, I don't see that Mr. Loebsack has come forward with a lot of ideas, solutions to problems we need to face. In fact, most of the good ideas he does espouse are ones that he has borrowed from me, I would say. And he's not much of a leader, even within his own party. And I think Southeast Iowans deserve somebody that has new ideas and can be a leader.
Borrowed ideas from you. Do tell.
Oh, well, one recent example was he was asked about what we need to do to stabilize Social Security. And this was in his Des Moines Register editorial interview. And he basically just said we need more economic growth, which no economist has said would be enough. And I was asked that at the Coralville Forum a couple weeks ago. And I said, well, I think what we need to do is either raise or eliminate the wage cap on payroll taxes to improve taxation revenue for the Social Security, and at the same time reduce payroll tax rate, which would allow lower taxes for lower and middle income Americans, and higher income Americans would be paying more, but that would allow the program to be stabilized. It's due to run out of trust fund resources in just 16 years, as you probably know. And after I gave that answer to the Coralville Forum, Dave Loebsack said he would consider raising or eliminating the wage cap.
Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, your second attempt to unseat Dave Loebsack, the last time around you were beaten by 7 percentage points, I think about 27,000 votes. What is different this time? What do you think is different this time to convince voters to make a different decision when they go to the ballot box?
Well, I think there's differences both within our campaign. That's probably the most critical. I have more experience doing what I'm doing. We have a much more robust campaign organization. Last time it was basically three fellows, two people in addition to myself, doing a lion's share of the work for much of the campaign. And we only had 7 months and a week before Election Day to run in a campaign. That really wasn't enough time. Despite that, we earned over 46% of the vote, and I think we can capitalize on experience and name ID and get it done this year.
Mm-hmm. Midterms are often seen as a referendum on the president, and there's a whole spectrum of support among Republicans, support and non-support for this Republican president, from members of Congress who wholeheartedly support the president in almost everything he does, to members who disagree with the many things he says and does. Also, we remember the so-called never Trumpers like Nebraska Senator Ben Sasse. He'll be on this program next week, as a matter of fact. Where are you on this spectrum of support for the president to non-support for the president as a Republican?
So I am interested in supporting what's best for the constituents of the second district, what's best for the country, and make sure whatever we do is constitutional. To the degree that what the administration wants to do aligns with that, I'm entirely supportive. To the degree that it suggests things that are not in alignment with that, I will try and do my best to work with the president to change and the administration to change course when necessary.
Mm-hmm. What policies would you say you disagree most with that the president has put forward is following?
The thing I have found the most bothersome, and I think this this is what you would hear from a lot of farmers and other manufacturers in the district, has been the tariffs and the trade war. This has been economically harmful. On average, most farmers and manufacturers would be willing to give the administration a pass, at least for now, but they want to see free trade going forward. They depend on global markets, and I think they deserve that. So trying to deal with trade issues, for example, with China, which is admittedly a bad actor, is necessary. But tariffs are a rather blunt instrument. It wouldn't have been the instrument I would have chosen.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the instruments of the president trying, as he says, to correct unfair trade practices with China, with other trading partners, even allies. So what would you use as an instrument other than tariffs?
Well, we have organizations like the WTO to work on things and just settling trade disputes, for one example, and aligning ourselves with our allies, the EU, Canada, Mexico, Japan, et cetera, to try and force some concessions from China to get fairer or freer, I should say, trading practices. Certainly are other avenues that we could have broached. Tariffs may still be required. They might have ultimately been required. Perhaps those efforts would have failed. But I would have liked to pursue those other efforts first if we could have gotten somewhere.
Mm-hmm. What do you say, Dr. Peters, to conservatives who do not support Donald Trump, who think he's actually bad for this country and cannot support, as conservatives, as Republicans perhaps, they say they could not support a member of Congress who is a member of the Republican Party at this particular time when Donald Trump dominates GOP policy?
Well, I haven't heard that before yet. So
you haven't heard Republicans
who wouldn't vote for me, for example, because of Donald Trump being in office?
No. Well, who have said, I can't vote Republican now because it is a way of supporting this president. You haven't heard that?
No, I haven't. Okay. I haven't. Not me personally.
Okay. What would you say to a person like that? There are conservatives disillusioned with their own party and with the direction that Donald Trump has taken the party. Those are the people I'm talking about.
Right. Well, I would say that's probably true of members of both parties right now. I think both parties are undergoing kind of a rethinking, a reorganization, trying to sort out what their emphasis, what their importance is going to be going forward. My focus is not so much at all on what the administration is doing, but what kind of representation we're getting in the second district. So I'm not running against Donald Trump or anybody else. I'm running against Dave Loebsack, and that's where my focus needs to remain.
Tom on my Facebook page asks you, how strongly are you willing to condemn President Trump's racist/sexist messaging and attitudes?
Like most Iowans, I do not like some of the tone of what Donald Trump has said, either on Twitter or in his rallies. But again, my focus is dealing with the second district. I wish that Donald Trump had been raised in Iowa or in the Midwest and had our kind of Iowa nice values. That would be lovely, but he was not. And so my ability to control his behavior is basically nil. So, and that includes if I were to condemn this or that action. My goal going forward is to make Congress work again and to hopefully work with the administration to pursue policies which are best for the second district.
Mm-hmm. If the president, if you're elected, the president says something that you disagree with, will you keep quiet? Will you take that into the press and say, you know, I really can't see why the president would say that.
I've not shied away from saying what I think. For example, I've already talked about how I think the tariffs were not the way I would have gone forward. Mm-hmm. And I think it has hurt Iowa farmers and manufacturers. So I'm not going to be shy about sharing my opinions, but I'm also going to pick my battles wisely. There's no sense in falling on your sword early on when you can make a bigger difference later.
My guest is Dr. Christopher Peters. He's a Coralville-based surgeon. He's trying to unseat the Democratic Congressman Dave Loebsack, the incumbent. Let's go to our phones in Iowa City. James is with us. Iowa City, definitely in the second district in Iowa. James, welcome to the program. Your question for Dr. Peters.
Yeah, I've been trying to access Dave Loebsack through town halls, but haven't been able to. When you were elected, do you plan on holding public town halls throughout the district?
Thank you, James.
I think that's a great question. Actually, it's one of the issues that I think we need to be focusing on. We need greater transparency and greater accountability among our elected officials. I have signed a town hall pledge that said we'll do a minimum of 4 town halls every term throughout the district. I think that is not enough. So I've actually personally pledged to do a town hall in every county, each of the 24 counties in the district every term. And if I could manage it, do a town hall every single year in each of the 24 counties.
You are a medical doctor, a surgeon, in fact. How does that background prepare you for membership representing Iowa in Congress?
Yeah, I hear that a lot, actually. I mean, I think that it's the answer is basically that a lot of what goes into becoming a physician, or for that matter, really anybody that's run a business or engineer or a small business, is that practical problem solving. The essence of being a physician is trying to diagnose a complex issue, understand it, evaluate various options for management or in treatment, in the case of the medical term, and then adjudicating or making the best guesses or best judgment about what is best for, in this case, the American people and the constituents of the 2nd District. So that skill set, I think, directly applies to policy.
Let's talk about healthcare, since you're a doctor. According to a report from 2014, this I'm accessing from the Commonwealth Fund report, more than 1 in 4 Americans either lacked health insurance or were underinsured. We define that as those who were insured yet spent a high share of their income on medical care. Is there an alternative? What are your thoughts on fixing our health care system, since we're sort of, we have the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, enacted in 2010, that being to some extent taken apart by this administration? Where do you think we should go?
Well, I think we need to have a change in emphasis first. So we do tend to focus too much on coverage, who has coverage. While failing to realize that the driving problem here has been rising healthcare costs, and these are costs for actual services provided, a prescription filled, a surgical procedure, an imaging test, whatever, and those costs have been rising for 35 years relative to other developed countries, roughly double in the U.S. And if those healthcare costs are high, then healthcare costs for healthcare coverage are also going to be high. So a lot of the people that don't have coverage or are, quote, underinsured, have simply been priced out of the market. As just one personal example, my family of 5, my wife and 3 boys, have a insurance policy that's a pre-ACA policy. You could not get it now, but it costs us $350 a month. If we were to try and replace that now, and again, we couldn't do exactly the same thing, but if we were to try to come close, it would cost us at least $1,000 more per month. $12,000 a year is not a small slice out of somebody's paycheck. Not for me or not for anyone. So I think we need to focus on reducing healthcare costs, and then the coverage issues will more likely take care of themselves.
Let's go to our phones. Limited time with Dr. Peters, moving through a variety of issues. We want to make sure we get as many callers in as possible, too. Other questions via social media. Joel is with us in Iowa City. Hi, Joel. We've got about 10 minutes left with Dr. Peters. What's your question for our candidate?
Well, I happen to be one of those Republicans that he hasn't heard of that is not going to vote Republican due to the way the National Party has gone. I just want to know, how is his partisanship going to be different than what we see at the national level? Because the 2nd District doesn't exist in a vacuum. What Donald Trump does affects everybody.
Joel, thanks from Iowa City.
So, again, I think we need our politics is broken nationwide. It's nothing new, no surprise here. We need to elect better representatives, better elected officials all up and down the ladder, people that are going to, number one, do what's constitutional, do what's best for the country, do what serves their constituents. Partisanship, notice I didn't mention that. So I'm not going to vote a party line if it's not in line with the Constitution, if it's not good for the country, and if it doesn't serve my constituents. We need to elect more representatives and senators who keep that focus, and I'm going to be one of those.
Mm-hmm. We want to have a less partisan country. I think a lot of us can agree on that point. But for instance, the confirmation of the Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh has drawn us in really starkly partisan lines in this country. And I'm aware that a member of the House doesn't confirm a U.S. Supreme Court justice. But do you think Brett Kavanaugh should be on the U.S. Supreme Court?
Well, he is, so I'm not going to speculate on whether he should be
or not.
Well,
everybody in our country has an opinion on it. Do you think he has the demeanor, the impartiality, and the background to be a Supreme Court justice? That's a fair question.
I think the things that concern me most about Brett Kavanaugh, and unfortunately it didn't get addressed during the hearings, were two things, or at least it didn't get addressed in the depth I would have liked, was his apparent deference to the executive branch, regardless of who's holding that office, I find concerning. And the fact that he doesn't seem to respect Americans' rights to privacy, those would be the issues
executive
that I would
have. Executive power concerns
you. Correct, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But on a broader issue, and you mentioned that you're going to have Senator Ben Sasse in next week, I believe you said.
Mm-hmm.
You probably saw Ben Sasse's remarks during the hearings before the Professor Ford testimony, talking about how the fact that we politicized this nomination process in the Supreme Court, and that's largely due to a failure of the legislative body to do what it's supposed to do, which is to legislate. And so as a result, we have overly politicized the executive branch and the judiciary.
Let's go back to our phones. Peter is with us from West Des Moines. You're outside the second district, but Peter, go ahead.
Hi. Doctor, I got a question for you in regards to health care and the extreme difference between the wholesale and retail price of medicine and the fact that the government refuses to do anything about the price gouging that these companies have allowed into the system, and that being one of the major causes of our high-cost medicine in this country.
I agree with you, and I'd encourage you to move to the 2nd District sometime before the next 3 weeks and cast a vote in my favor. But there are a couple issues here. Number one, pharmaceutical companies taking advantage of our intellectual property rights, doing it through a process of called evergreening, where they try and keep their patents alive and profitable. And there's another issue, which is middlemen called pharmacy benefit managers, who do tend to inflate the prices and not try to work to reduce prices, and not to share any refunds they might receive from the pharmaceutical companies back with the insurer. And this occurs both at federal level and state and local and business insurance plans. So looking at reforming our intellectual property rights and looking at the role of pharmacy benefit managers to ensure transparency and cost containment are really critical.
Another question from the Facebook page regarding medical health care in this country. Christopher asks, as a doctor, how do you feel about the way Kim Reynolds has handled the privatization of Medicaid? Have you seen an impact on your patients?
I've not personally seen too much of an impact on the patients that we see. We do accept Medicaid patients. We have seen a problem where sometimes we have difficulty getting their pre-authorization for, we do procedures in our office, getting that process gets done, but it tends to be slower and a little bit more difficult. We have heard from people who would like to be on Medicaid who can't find an insurer for them, and for those folks, we typically try and find another alternative, either a cash-based reduced price. You know, we provide some free services as well.
What about the question from Christopher about the privatization of Medicaid management? From the get-go, when the privatization went through, I know you're a regular listener to this program, and we've had plenty of callers calling up saying, this is not working for me to have this private management. What is your view on this move to privatize the management of Medicaid?
Well, no, I actually have not been a fan of it. I don't think, in principle, it could have worked, but in practical experience, it hasn't worked out terribly well. From what I understand, what I've read. So I think that's something that the governor's office will look at going forward. I would like to see this be part of a broader discussion on health care reform as well, and that would affect Medicare, Medicaid, and private insurers.
Would it be better to go back to the old state-run system, completely state-run and managed?
It probably would be from what I'm hearing. Again, in principle, privatization of Medicaid could work fine, but it hasn't seemed to work out very well from what I understand. Again, my direct experience has been fairly minimal with dealing with the Medicaid people. They mostly have been happy. But I think from what I've heard in reports, it hasn't worked out tremendously well.
Mm-hmm. We heard this week that the federal budget deficit has swelled to nearly $800 billion in the fiscal year 2018, driven in large part by a sharp decline in corporate tax revenues after the Trump tax cuts took effect. This deficit rise nearly 17% year over year. It's now on pace to top $1 trillion a year before the next presidential election. This is according to forecasts from the Trump administration and outside analysts. So this would be the largest deficit for a fiscal year since 2012, when the economy, federal revenues, were still recovering from the depths of the recession. We have a thriving economy by many measures. Is this fiscally responsible, that tax cut?
No, we haven't been fiscally responsible for over 21 years. This is the last time the Congress actually passed a budget through regular order. And since that time, our budget, our deficit has grown from $5 trillion, or debt, has grown from $5 trillion to over $21 trillion. This is nothing new. We've got people who, in elected office, who like to give people what they want, which is services and tax cuts, and combined, we end up mounting more and more debt. It's one of the big reasons I'm running. I want to make sure that our country is worth inheriting for generations that follow us. And we need to address this debt. We just need to.
Mm-hmm. Mitch McConnell says it's the entitlement programs, Medicaid, Medicare, even Social Security, that have not been addressed that are the reason for this, not the Republican tax cut. Do you agree with that?
No, I think it's both. I mean, it's everything. We have the fastest growing portions of our federal budget are Social Security and particularly Medicare or health care more broadly. But it's also declining revenue. I am in favor, was in favor of the tax bill, especially in reducing corporate tax rates to make us more competitive with other developed countries. We needed to do that. I would have liked to have seen us close more corporate loopholes at the same time and to make sure that there was parity between small and large corporations. So I think the tax bill was not perfect. I would have supported it, but there was a lot of I would have liked to have seen that wasn't done. But more to the point, I think, is this big omnibus spending bill that we had also that increased spending, again, outside of the normal process where Congress is supposed to authorize funds and go through a budgeting process.
We're running out of time. I have to ask you to answer briefly, please, Dr. Peters, your position on immigration policy, the so-called Dreamers, minors being separated from parents who have been deported, the big southern border wall that the president promised during his campaign. Your position?
I think we do need to secure our border in a cost-effective way. I think people who came here outside legal channels but are living peaceful, prosperous lives should have some security in their future and a pathway to permanent status. And I also believe that we need to expand our legal immigration, make that easier and faster for people that want to come here, and then we can properly vet them. That will help compete against the tide of people coming through extra legal means.
Simon in Iowa City is on our line, but I'll have to be brief and just ask his question that I see on the screen. Will there be another debate between you and Dave Loebsack before Election Day?
It looks like not. Mr. Loebsack pulled out of the Davenport debate, which was scheduled for this Saturday. He cites the fact that the venue was unable to include the Libertarian candidate, Mark Strauss, who you had on yesterday. I think it actually was honestly just an attempt to avoid a one-on-one debate by Mr. Loebsack, and it goes again back to the point that we need more accountability for our elected officials. Debates, town halls, actually show up and present yourself to your constituents.
Dr. Chris Peters, we've run out of time. Thank you so much for coming in. Republican candidate for Iowa's 2nd Congressional District. Thank you very much. Thanks to our listeners for the great questions as well. Dr. Peters, thank you.
Thank you, Ben.
Coming up in just a second, Bill Petrosky of the Des Moines Register, Chris Larimer of the University of Northern Iowa, join me to discuss some statewide races that don't receive as much attention and also what chances Democrats have of reclaiming a majority in the Iowa State House. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.